And I'll go ahead and say better than ever, right? We are back and better than ever. Especially Dr. Webb, she's feeling better and we're thankful for that. Yeah, glad you have recovered. Scott is not in his office. He'll share that story. Like the things that we plan on talking about end up inevitably being based on real life, right? And so we're talking today in our Bakersfield Mastermind about the life of the entrepreneur. And what does it mean to, maybe you're questioning, well, what if I'm an entrepreneur? How do I know? How can I tell? And then how do I get started on that journey and ultimately start to create this business plan? And it really came out of our discussion 2 weeks ago on this idea of trying to understand some of the business needs and business structures that we have to take care of. And so now we want to follow that up and just say, now we want to help you get started. So if you think you're an entrepreneur, if you are wondering if 2021 is a point in time where you need to start a business or dive into this business or take from that those side hustle secrets we talked about last time into this full-time venture, we want to talk about that today. So Scott, Juanita, welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be back. Always enjoy getting to share our insights and our life experiences. So great to be here.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin. Yeah, I'm excited. Scott, let's start with you. The first question, I'll go ahead and pop it up here on the screen. How do I know if I'm an entrepreneur? Maybe somebody's watching this and saying, okay, so I hate my job, but does that necessarily make me an entrepreneur? How do you know you're an entrepreneur, Scott?
Yeah, well, you definitely don't have to spell entrepreneur to be an entrepreneur, which is a good thing, because it's a tough word to spell. But I would say, you know, you're an entrepreneur when you have an idea that is actually creating revenue, that you actually have, because just because coming up with an idea is the start of being an entrepreneur. But until you put it into action and you're actually, you've got customers and you're generating some revenue, I think that to me is like the very first milestone to know that what you're doing is working. Somebody's actually willing to pay you for this idea that you have. So I think that's a good first test.
Yeah, making money is a basic fundamental requirement, isn't it? Juanita, what about you?
Well, you know, I would throw in there, I appreciate you said, you know, I hate my job, so does that make me an entrepreneur? You know, there are days when I hate being an entrepreneur. So, yeah, okay. So don't use that as the groundwork for making the decision, because there will be days, even as an entrepreneur, that you don't love what you're doing. You know, those days, it's the things that, you know, it's all the administrative tasks or the things that really aren't your passion. So I would say from my perspective and what convinced me that I really was more of an entrepreneur than a good employee was when I had the opportunity to start to branch out and do that. I had been employed my entire work life up until the early 2000s and took a different direction. I spent some time with family, did some homeschooling of my kids, and I thought, I really like this independence, and found that the independence was very motivating for me and was very exciting for me. I would say one of the key factors that each of us need to really internally assess is, do we need somebody pushing us or do we push ourselves? Mm. If you're the kind of person that really needs someone else to keep you on task, someone else to really, you know, kind of poke at you to make sure that you're doing what you need to do, I would say it's likely you're not an entrepreneur. Because as an entrepreneur, there's nobody else to tell you what to do or what to get done or how much needs to be accomplished. That's all on you. And so if really taking a good hard look at yourself, really beginning to understand who you are as an individual, what motivates you, what excites you, sure. You know, yeah, do we all have a boss? Yeah, we all do. It's called our clients.
Yeah.
Those are our bosses, but they're not the ones who are going, hey, are you getting my work done? Are you making sure that you're getting this taken care of for me? They call and say, hey, I want this. You've got to have the motivation intrinsically and the enthusiasm to do the work, even when it's boring or not necessarily you want to do. Either that or the staff to hand it off to.
Yes, yeah.
Take on something else, right?
So no joke today, like I'm just tired. And I looked at my list and I thought, I don't want to do any of this. okay, we're going to do it anyway. Like, that's just where we're at. So this desire for want, I don't think can be the determining factor. And I like your perspective of sometimes you just have to have the self-discipline to be able to do it yourself. I think that's the number one thing I come back to. Like, the days I don't want to work, can I put in the work? And if I can't, or I want that supervision, you're never going to make it. And I think maybe that answer, I don't want to say changes, but it can be nuanced depending upon the stage of life we're in, right? Like, certainly if I'm younger and have nothing tying me down, I can go kind of venture what little bit that I have and not really feel the effects. But then you get to your early 20s or mid-20s, and maybe you start to build a life that you enjoy, and you're in your 30s, and you have a family, and I've had some clients that are like, I'm in my mid-50s. Is it too late to start a business? I'm 60. Who would want to hire me? Right? Like, as you age, you start to – those perspectives start to shift. And so one of the questions we also want to ask today and Juanita, I'd love to start with your perspective on this as somebody that has kids, but they're now grown and adult, and your journey is farther than I was, Scott or I, and we can talk about what it's like to have – kids at home and try to do the entrepreneur thing. But how have you, throughout the course of your career, integrated work and family life?
And that's a great question. And I, as I've said before to you guys, I really admire the, and for everyone now, especially because obviously of the pandemic and now that kids are home considerably more because of school changes and those types of things. But I admire tremendously the effort that you guys are having to do. I'm not sure that in my 20s and 30s, I would have, you know, succeeded as well as you guys are doing. But for me, family has always come first for me. As a young mom, I only worked part time because I wanted the challenge and the excitement of work. But I also wanted to make a commitment to my family. So for many years, I worked part time as a mom. And then started working more full-time as my kids got older, past high school. As they moved on, then I felt like I could go back to work full-time. And then after being back to work full-time for a few years, it was like, yeah, this isn't what I want to do full-time. And that's when I became the entrepreneur because I had the freedom and the flexibility to do that.
Let me ask a clarifying question.
Okay.
You said you worked part-time as a mom. You worked full-time as a mom and part-time as an employee, correct?
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Yes. And hey, even when they leave the house and they're no longer under your house, your roof, you're still a full-time parent. So, you know, the challenges are just different. It may not be the physical day to day, but there's as much emotional investment in your kids and your grandkids and your family. And so that doesn't change. It's just a shifting of where the focus was. So that never changed. But yes, thank you. I was a full-time mom and a part-time employee. So, but I did, even when my kids were in high school, was when I was finishing up my doctorate. So, you know, I was in my mid-50s when I was getting my doctorate. So it's not something that can't be done. And again, it's just having that motivation and being willing to say, hey, this is a priority. My work is a priority. My education is a priority, whatever it is for you. And then making sure that your family life still gets included in that. So, and you guys have the bigger challenge, and I'm sure you can each share of what it's like now trying to work full time from home and have your kids at home with you because of school, the current school situation. So why don't you guys share about that?
Yeah, sure. I can share. And the question, I think, is I'm getting a little feedback. Are you guys getting some feedback?
Yes.
Is that – maybe you guys can mute. Maybe if you mute, let's see if – where is the – okay. Are we still getting feedback? Oh, okay. Yep. Now we're not getting feedback. Okay. Yeah, so I love this question of integrating work and family life, because I think a lot of people talk about this as a balance. And honestly, there is no balance. Like, you're not balancing, you know, balance is like two equal things. You can't do it. It just won't work. And the key is integrating your work with your family life. And like Juanita was saying, I think it's it's way easier today than it was even just, you know, 5 or 10 years ago with the technology, just like us. We're all sitting in our homes and talking right now. Before we started this session, I told you guys, you know, I'm over in my my master bedroom. My wife's on the other side of the house in our office because she's doing a Zoom call. My wife's a physician. She works 24-hour shifts. And so integrating your business with your family is a challenge. But like that old saying goes, where there's a will, there's a way. You find a way to make it work with the business that you do. And that's one of the things I think that you have to think about early on as you start exploring what you're passionate about, what your entrepreneurial career is going to be focused on. Is that something that I can actually do with a wife who works 24-hour shifts and two littles? I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old daughter who are homeschooled. And I think that's a question everybody's got to answer on their own to say, like, how am I going to make this work? Because some things like what we do, we all primarily are service, you know, coaching people. We can integrate that more easily into our lives than other kinds of entrepreneurial things that, you know, may not work as well. So for me, it's really being a master of my time, because I think that's critical to success, is like, how am I going to be effective in the time that I do have available, and how do I make the best use of that time and still not neglect my family? And I think for me, it's really looking at each week as a work schedule and planning how am I going to spend each week, because each week's a little bit different, and planning those work hours so you can be as most effective as you can during the time that you've got available. But then also having the commitment of your spouse if you're married. If you're single, it's way easier because you don't have anybody to deal with there. But when you're married, I think that's another thing that you've got to have a conversation with your spouse about: what's it going to take to commit to becoming an entrepreneur? And is this going to work? Because it can really drive a wedge in a relationship when you're getting started and you're putting in a ton of hours and your spouse feels like, especially if you've got kids, that they're taking on way more responsibility and you're kind of freeloading on the watching the kids while you're starting this business, which seems like a really selfish thing, which in some ways it is kind of. So for me, it's been totally about just being a good manager of my time and each week working with my wife to integrate our work-life schedules and then doing what you can with the time you've got available too. I think you've got to be honest about the time you have available and what you can get from that time, because I don't have 60 hours a week. I've got maybe 20 to 40 hours most weeks, and so I've just got to maximize the time I have available to get the best result I can.
Yeah. And I appreciate something you brought up, Scott, because I think so many times, I mean, for the three of us, we have very flexible work hours. Much of the work that we can do late in the evening. If we're working on projects, we can do those after hours, maybe even after the kids have gone to bed. But as an entrepreneur, if you're starting a business where you're going to have shop hours, you know, you have to have a storefront open certain hours of the day, that changes the dynamics dramatically about your flexibility and your ability to, you know, integrate that family time, because then they have to be much more flexible around you and this time that you have to be at the store or at the facility, as compared to those of us who can work from home and can work flexible hours. So thanks for bringing up that point. That was really valuable. So Justin, so how about you in integrating your work and family life?
Yeah. And I, you know, I was thinking about this as I was listening to Scott talk, and I don't know that it's necessarily true just of entrepreneurs, but one of the things that I've noticed or outside of entrepreneurship, maybe it also has a truth, but I've experienced it as an entrepreneur, I should say. And that is the integration has also come in the opportunities that it's given me to talk to my kids about what I do. Like a couple of months ago, somebody was asking, like, well, what did your dad do? And they're like, well, he works with people and he helps them. You know, and like you could see that they were just like struggling for what is it that dad does, right? And so I suppose the easy answer is like, oh, my dad's a banker, or, you know, my dad works at a bank, or he works at a school. But in this service-based industry, well, he talks to people. So he's a therapist. No, like, in that moment, it has given me the chance to say, look, I have some pretty non-traditional work hours, and there are some days I'm at 6 a.m. meetings, and there are some days I'm at 8 p.m. meetings, and there are some days that, because of those two things, I take off like 10 to noon. And you guys don't see that because you're at school. Or there are other days where I try to structure, I'm going to get everything I need to done while you're at school so that when you're home, I can be home with you and not have to worry about work. And it's really allowed us to start to further those conversations of the reason I can do this is because I work for myself. And if you want that structure, great. Like I'll help you find a job and do whatever you're passionate about. But the flip side is if you notice the fact that like at 3 o'clock, I get to go for a motorcycle ride and that sounds appealing to you when you get older, you need to look at starting your own business, right? And so it's given me some additional integration. Is not just necessarily how do I work around the kids' schedules. It's how have I integrated the kids into the work that I do? And I know a lot of small business, you know, particularly that storefront idea, Juanita, you were mentioning about that, you know, the kids come in and stock the shelves or pack the boxes to get shipped out or whatever. And it can really, in that sense, integrate the family as well. So we'll keep moving on. I see we're 15 minutes into this. I want to keep the conversation moving. Next, so we're talking about this idea of how do I know if I'm an entrepreneur? How do I integrate this work family life? And I phrased the question as, how do I get started? And really, I think the story behind this is, Scott, Juanita, Justin, how did you get started as an entrepreneur? So Juanita, why don't you just walk us through how you got started on this? I think I want to be an entrepreneur. I think I want to run my own business. I think I'm going to build the life of this.
Well, you know, and part of it, like I said, was I had been in the employment setting for years and years and years. And so the majority of my work life has been under an employment setting. But when that changed back in 2004 and I had the opportunity to sit back and just really analyze what I wanted to do, I decided I didn't want to be employed any longer by someone. I wanted to be able to try it on my own. My dad had been a self-made general contractor in the San Francisco area, built custom homes. So I had experienced, you know, being self-employed. My dad was, my brother was, he took over the business for my dad. And so I knew what it was like and some of those challenges. And I thought, you know, hey, it's time for me to try it. And so I just jumped in and decided that's how I wanted to do it. Began, had a couple of clients, people that I knew that were interested in me helping with some issues related to human resources. And so I stepped in and began that, and it just blossomed from there because I was able to step in and help people where they had needs. And that was the biggest piece for me, was just being able to identify those individuals. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that when we talk about marketing, but to be able to identify those individuals who needed the help. And really doing the networking necessary to let people know that I'm out there and available.
Great. Scott, what about you?
Good point about how do you know if you're an entrepreneur, which is you don't like having a boss. That's actually another one of those things you can, I can relate to that, Juanita, because it's like I love the freedom. And, but on the flip side, if you've got all that freedom, you can really, you know, waste a lot of time. So that might be another one of those. How do you know if you're an entrepreneur? Kind of like, how do you know if you're a redneck? You might be an entrepreneur if you don't like working for a boss, because not that you won't have a boss, because our clients are bosses, but not a formal boss. So I got started with my process improvement business. I was working as a VP for a manufacturing company here in Bakersfield. I came out here from Ohio in 2007. And about 2 years into that stint, I wanted to bring in some help, hire some consultants to help me deploy process improvement in this business. And so I started searching online for consultants that do that work. And I found one, ironically, right here in Bakersfield, and thought, oh, this is really cool. I've got a local resource. And I reached out to her, talked to my president, the guy I was working for, about it. And he just wasn't excited. Consultants, you know, we're all too expensive. We don't do anything. We just charge a lot of money and don't deliver any results, right? And at least that was his perspective. So I never got him to embrace this idea of bringing consultants in. Then the Great Recession hits in 2009. And we're laying off tons of people. We had about 300, maybe 400 people at one point, and we were laying lots of people off. Finally, we got down to the bare nubs, and I was one of the last ones hanging on, and I knew it was time for me to go. And so I basically got kicked out of the door and saying, we don't need you anymore, Scott. And I remember that consultant, the lady that started that business, and reached out to her. And ironically, she happened to be in town that day. She lived in Bakersfield for a number of years, but wasn't living there at the time. And we struck up a conversation, and it just blossomed from there. So I became an entrepreneur through basically becoming an independent contractor working for this company. So that would be my advice to you. Those of you that are seeking to be an entrepreneur, probably one of the easiest ways to do it, or one of the easier ways, is to find someone else that's going to go out and do all the marketing for you, find you the work, the thing you're passionate about. And that gives you time to develop kind of your craft and the marketing side of it and the business side of it, which is takes a lot of time. And what you're really good at usually to start with is just the actual work. So that's what happened to me. I started working with her, and a few years into it, I started going out and selling the work that she was doing or her business was promoting. And eventually it got to the point where I built a reputation with my clients, and one of them down in Louisiana knew someone who knew someone else who knew someone else who knew someone here in Bakersfield. And they called me one day out of the blue and said, hey, Scott, I need some help with this. And that's how my process improvement business got started. It was all through connections, but I started doing it as an independent contractor, and I still do that work from time to time, and got the chance to learn how to market and how to run the business from the inside, not as an employee, but as an independent contractor. And then my financial coaching business just grew out of my passion of helping people. So my process improvement business, I'm coaching people, I'm helping them, I'm learning more about them personally and becoming really good friends with them, because most of my engagements are lasting for a year or plus longer time frame. And they start to tell me about all their challenges and struggles and kids and finances. And I'm just, you know, back then getting out of debt and starting to build some wealth and gaining some really good traction now that I don't have all this debt hanging over my head. And so naturally it just kind of grew out of that. My conversations turned into an actual coaching business for people that want help with their finances to, you know, just behave better with their money so they get to keep more of it. So it was really kind of my financial coaching just kind of organically grew out of my process improvement coaching and the relationships I had there, but it was all just through connections. And that's the other piece of advice I'd give those of you that are looking to become entrepreneurs, is find people that are already doing what you're doing and ask them how they got started. And believe me, this is a great first question, because we like to talk about ourselves. You know, most people do. You know, when you ask them, hey, how did you get started? You know, most people will talk and they'll keep going, like, if you guys don't cut me off here, I could probably talk for the next 4 hours about it, right? And there's no short, you know, there's no shortage of people out there that are doing what you're doing probably, and they love to talk about it, and you can learn about all their challenges and issues so that you don't face those same challenges and issues. In fact, that's kind of what this mastermind group really is all about, is eventually this, we want this to spread to a broader audience to where we can interact a little bit more face-to-face or virtually with Zoom, so that we can share lessons, you can share lessons to become an entrepreneur, or a solopreneur is kind of the latest buzzword too, just you yourself, like, are a solopreneur. So yeah, that's how I got started, just making those connections, and it just turned into an opportunity to help someone grow their business as an independent contractor and learn the whole process of finding business and marketing and presenting and putting proposals together. And, you know, 12 years later, I'm doing most of it on my own now.
Yeah. And I think I would echo one thing that you said, Scott, that it's really not a stock answer. I mean, everybody's experience is different. What's going to work for each person? You know, I had the benefit of having a full-time spouse who was working. And so, you know, the financial side of it initially was not a major concern on my part. Others, that might not be the case. And, you know, so there might be some concerns in that area. You know, you guys are both potentially, you know, the main breadwinners in your home. And so that could be a scary step to try to step out and be, you know, the main breadwinner in your family if you're doing it as a solopreneur, you know, those kinds of challenges. And so for each person, it's going to be different, but there are some similarities between what needs to do and the networking. I agree. absolutely critical. So.
Oh, go ahead, Scott.
No, I was just going to bring up, that's a good point that Juanita brings up about having your finances in order, you know, having a solid savings in place if you're going to jump and do the solopreneur entrepreneur thing and quit your job, which I would not recommend doing. Like, I think there's an analogy of like, you want to get the boat close enough to the dock before you jump. And so if at all possible, the best approach is to kind of to work a full-time job and be working this as a side hustle if you can do that. And once you get to the point where you know the only thing holding you back is more hours, that's when you're ready to jump, you know, and assuming you're making enough money to make it worthwhile. But yeah, if you're in a situation like for me, my wife's a physician and has a good income, we don't have any debt, you know, that helps too. That is a big part of being an entrepreneur. I think when you're ready, this kind of goes back to our first question, is when you've got the finances in place to do it. But the good thing about nowadays, though, to start a business doesn't require really hardly any money at all. Like, there's so many things you can do online to start a business online for very little investment. But that is a big part of it. You got to think about, like, how am I going to support myself? Because you don't want to start something without knowing you've got a good enough income coming in to cover your expenses. That's just not a wise thing to do. So find out what it takes to be successful. And when you get to the point where I just need to be able to put more hours in, that's when you're ready to probably make the jump full time, if that's what you want to do. And you could be an entrepreneur and work part time at your solo thing. Cause I know lots of financial coaches, they do a full time day job. And then their kind of their side gig is their financial coaching. And that's a legitimate, you know, entrepreneur as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I know when I got started, it was quite honestly just, so I was pastoring at a church at the time and started doctoral school and had a coach. And he was the one, I think I shared a bit of this story in one of the previous episodes of where he was just like, you know, you can do something about leaders that have burnout. And so part of it is I got started because I just simply got started. Like, somebody told me to do this, but behind that was this, and Scott, you were alluding to this. There's a need out there. And what makes an entrepreneur is the person that has the drive to figure out how to help people meet those needs. Right. And I was talking to somebody this last week and like, well, can I start a business now? People don't seem to have a lot of money. Everybody's been laid off, except most of those jobs have recovered and the stock market's doing well and people are starting to go back to work. But even through the midst of the worst of the pandemic, people were still spending money, right? Like they may have been looking for ways to cut back, and maybe I got to cut back on the amount of, you know, food I'm willing to take out, but I still want my Netflix or my Disney Plus. Like, people were still paying bills, right? People were still spending money. And the number one thing that you need to do as an entrepreneur is find what that need is for people and then help meet it. And that was, I mean, I was a pastor, I had a bunch of connections as a pastor, and I just called a bunch of my pastor friends and said, I'm doing some research on burnout. I want to know if I can help and do something about it. Would you let me coach you for 3 months and document your experience with a coach helping you avoid burnout? I want to know the good, the bad, the ugly, and then ultimately I need to write about you because it's a school assignment. So I'll keep your name anonymous, but would you let me coach you and see if we can do something about the problems that you're facing? And a lot of those people went from, yeah, I'll do your 3 month thing, to, Justin, I don't want to stop. Let's actually turn this into something. And all of a sudden, you know, a year or two into business, I'm like, this part-time thing is doing better than my full-time thing. So a lot of that is like, to get started, number one, just make a commitment to get started. And number two, find the need that people have and be willing to meet it. But outside of that, I think, Scott, you were transitioning us really well to this next question. And that is, so once we're started, you mentioned there's a bunch of resources out there and find them online and just get going. But how do I create a business plan? Do I need to create a business plan before I get started? Can I start and then create a business plan? Do I do the business plan first? Scott, since you transitioned us there, I want to get going. I think I'm an entrepreneur, right? We've watched 30 minutes of questions now. I'm ready to do this. What do I have to do for a business plan?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that you necessarily need a business plan per se. If you've got an idea, just like you said, Justin, like if you're helping people solve a problem that they have or fulfilling a need that they have, you have a potentially viable business or potentially viable idea. And other people are probably doing what you're doing already. There's, you know, probably no business out there that's, you know, only the only one in the world. There are no monopolies really anymore. I mean, so it's like somebody's doing already what you're doing. And, but a business plan, I think, is helpful in that it just helps you get your ideas out on the table or on the screen, and helps you understand, like, who are my customers? Like, I'm actually going through this with a client of mine right now, putting together a business plan. And there's a really good tool out there. It's a one page, it's called the Lean Business Canvas. So if you do a Google for Lean Business Canvas, you will find this one page business plan, basically one page, one sheet of paper. And it kind of steps you through all the questions you need to ask, like, who is my customer? What is my value proposition? That's a really good question to ask, is like, why would somebody pay me money for this? Like, is this stuff that I'm doing free, available somewhere else that's just as good as what I'm going to be charging for? Why would they pay me for this? And then looking at the revenue and the cost, you know, how much am I going to bring in? How much is it going to cost to do this? So there's just a handful of questions that can help you start to shape your idea around what it is you think there's a need for. But then doing just like you did, Justin, is some of the best business planning you can do is go and talk to real people. You know, I'm about to do this with this client here in Bakersfield. We're going to go talk to some real people that could possibly use this idea that he has to see, like, what do they think about this? Is there value in this? What could we change and make this better to help create more value? Or there's maybe no value, and very quickly you find out, okay, I need to move on to the next idea. So really my advice would be, as quickly as possible, find people that you would be looking to help, just like you did, Justin, and see, are they willing, is this something that they find of value? Maybe even do it for free for a little bit. I wouldn't recommend doing it for free for very long, because you want people to pay for what you're doing at some point, right? Otherwise it's people don't take seriously what you're helping them with usually. At least that's been my experience. When people don't pay for it, they're not going to put in the time and effort to do it. But when they're paying you for it, they are going to put in the time and energy. But at that point, you know, you've got something that's valid, like somebody wants, and then you got to take it to the next step and figure out, can I actually make money at doing this? Can I actually turn a profit? And you don't have to get into really detailed finances. You just look at, well, what is it going to cost for me to do this? And how much can I charge? And can I make a profit? And for most of the business, like the stuff that we do, our overhead is like very little. I don't know exactly what your guys' overhead is, but I don't think any of you have formal offices. You know, the overhead for me is internet and my home, which is already paid for. I don't have any major overhead. So most businesses today have very little cost when you've got an idea where you're providing some kind of a service. So it's pretty easy to generate a profit. But the real question is, will what I'm offering help someone, and do they see value in that, that they're willing to pay for it? Because there's so much great stuff that's free, like that business canvas I was just telling you about. That's a free tool that's online, but people will pay others to help them fill in the blanks, you know. So there's value not in creating it, but there's value in helping people put in the right information to validate a business plan. But yeah, maybe that first step is going and talking to real people.
I think you raise a good point, Scott, in this idea of giving, you know, one of the questions was kind of give this away for free. You know, if it's free out there, do I need to give it away for free? I'll be honest. You can go to my website. Like, here's maybe the first plug I've done in the month or whatever I was doing. You can go to justinhebert.com and you'll get this pop-up that says, take this 5-day e-course and increase your productivity. It's also the exact same steps that I do in my coaching program, and I can track both. And the people that pay me for coaching complete that 5-day course 100% of the time. And the people that go to my website and get the exact same thing with the exact same material completely for free complete it about 10% of the time. Because once you're willing to invest money and take that action, you're willing to follow through on those results. So maybe an unintentional part of my business plan has been, I'm going to give away my best content. And I don't really feel like I have to hide anything, because if you're going to come to my content and consume it for free, I can almost, because I have the metrics to prove it, I can almost guarantee you're not actually going to do anything with it. You're not going to rip me off. You're not going to pirate my stuff. You're too lazy to do it, right? I'm not that worried about somebody taking my stuff, my free stuff, even though it's the same stuff that people pay me for every single month, right? And so part of my business plan is just, I'm going to give away the best stuff I can for free. And the flip side of that is, not only do you tend to not do anything with it, but it forces me to continue to generate new content, right? Because now I've realized, I'm giving this away for free. I can't continue to charge for this. I've got to up that game a little bit, right? And so it keeps me sharp and engaged in that business ownership process of, take it for free. I don't care, because you probably won't do anything with it. But when you pay, you're more likely to do something with it. And then I'll continue to get better, because I've got new people that are engaged and giving me feedback to create the next generation of this business evolution. Juanita, what thoughts do you have?
Yeah, and I just wanted to capitalize on one concept, because you both kind of brought up the issue of, you know, making sure you charge for your services. I think that's one of the number one areas where most entrepreneurs aren't sure how to value their services, and typically tend to undervalue themselves, because they really haven't done any research to find out, hey, what do other people charge for these services? And so if you're going to start something, I really encourage you to look into, hey, check out what other companies charge. Check out what other independent contractors are charging for the similar service that you're going to offer, so you have an idea of what the market will bear. You know, that was one of the things that, even when I started, I was way undervaluing myself with all of the education and the degrees that I had and the certifications that I obtained and the experience that I had had. I realized for many years I way undervalued what I was charging, and have since obviously corrected that, and actually am doing much better, not because I'm charging more, but because people are willing to pay that for the quality of service that they receive. And so that's a big step to really investigate and do some research to identify what you're going to charge for your services.
Yeah.
I was just going to add to that. What Juanita is saying is so true, that when I find, like, when you charge more for what you do, you get a higher quality client or customer. Because I think, I mean, all of you both have probably experienced the same thing I have, is that when you don't charge enough, you just don't attract people that are interested in doing what you're doing or trying to help them do. And that's frustrating. Like, we don't just want to take people's money. We want to help them and see, because they, by helping them, they're going to help us, because they're going to tell other people, hey, I had this great experience with Juanita. I had this great experience with Justin. You need to check it out. So I think that is so true. Like, you need to price yourself competitively. I would even say price yourself 10, 15% above what everybody else is charging, because then the people that are willing to pay for it will ask, like, how come you're so much more expensive? What more am I getting from you? You're going to attract a much higher quality client. And I do the same thing you do, Justin, give everything away for free, because that's a great way to attract clients, because they start using it. And Justin, 10%, that's actually pretty good. Like, any kind of online course, man, if you can get 10% to finish, that's, like, really good, honestly, because it's like people need someone like us to push them. And so I find, like, when I give free stuff away, people start using it. They struggle with it. They know what they need to do, but they're like, man, I just need somebody to give me a kick in the butt, you know, every week to get this done. And that kick in the butt is actually worth quite a bit of money when you compare it to the value of what we're trying to help people do. So that's the other word of advice I have, is give as much as you can away for free. Because, like Justin's saying, people aren't going to take what you're giving them and, like, open up their own business and start stealing your content. Now, they might do that, but that's not likely to happen. They're likely to take it and not use it or struggle with it. And then the serious ones are going to reach out and say, man, Justin, could you help me? I'm just not motivated enough to do this, or I don't quite understand how to do it. So that can be another great marketing tactic, which I know we're going to talk about here a little later.
Yeah. And I do the same thing. You know, if somebody calls and they just need some help, I'm more than happy to help them on that first call and say, hey, here's what I can do for you. Here's the answer to your question. You know, give them as much support as I can. And then obviously then down the road, they have another question and then they want to come back and get some additional help. So it really does, like you said, Scott, it really does pay off from both of you to, you know, give away some of that stuff initially that we can provide for them that will be helpful. So yeah, it's a great process.
Yeah. And, you know, I think part of this idea of this business plan is it gives us the framework, right? Like it's maybe the good analogy is the training wheels, it's the markers on the highway, right? It tells us this is the direction we want to go. This is the direction of traffic. But beyond that, there are ways to integrate a strategic plan, right? And that's really what we want to talk about next is how do you start to identify the mission, the vision, and the values that this company is going to be built on? And years ago when I worked in a gym, one of the things that I was tasked with was selling personal training. And I was very upfront with people and I said, if you can hold yourself accountable to coming into the gym and know what you're going to do when you get here and stay in control of your diet, you don't need a personal trainer. But if you struggle with any one of those three, you need to come and talk to me. And I got kind of very good at that close, right? Because it made it very simple for people to say, wait, I think I can hold myself to coming to the gym, but I don't know what I'm doing when I get here. And I have a lot of questions about my diet, right? But it laid, if you know what you're going to do, you can do it. Go. Like, this will be the world's shortest sales pitch because you don't need me to sell you anything. Part of that is a business plan, and part of that is a strategic plan, right? It's the mission, it's the vision, it's the values that I want to be about. And so, Juanita, I know especially in the HR world, you have done a lot of helping people with vision and values. Walk us through how that works.
Okay. Well, for me, and I appreciate, and definitely, I would answer no to all three of those questions that you just asked. So I would definitely need your help as a personal trainer. From mission, vision, and values, those are critical underpinnings for your business, just for you to understand, where am I going? What am I trying to accomplish? And how am I going to do that? So, I mean, if I had to kind of give a general statement about mission, vision, and values, and some people put it vision first, mission first, there's kind of some debate about that, but whatever order you put them in, your mission statement really should help you provide focus, okay? What do you do? Who are you doing it for? Why? That's your mission, right? That's what you're trying to accomplish. That's what you want to be focused on. The vision side of it, that's the fun part. That's the where can I take this? Where can I go with this business? What else could I offer? How could I branch out? The vision becomes that, you know, it helps me describe the future. Where's my inspiration? What creates the excitement for me? What motivates us to do this job? And that's kind of your vision statement. And then lastly, value statement is really how are we going to behave? What is our culture going to be like? And this has been a big topic recently in the HR community, well, pre-pandemic at least. This was a big topic of culture of the organization and how do we establish that culture or how do we change a culture? Well, the first thing you got to do is define what you want your culture to be like. What kinds of character qualities do you want your employees to exhibit? Or are you going to offer, you know, to your clients? I mean, just taking it down to some of the basic things like, you know, being timely or punctual, being resourceful for our clients, being able to offer them something that, you know, they can't easily find themselves, but because of my experience, I know where to go to look for it. Being responsible, you know, delivering when I say I'm going to deliver. Just taking the time, working through the exercise of defining those will really help you set that strategic plan that's going to help you go where you want to go for the future. You know, for me personally, I had been in the HR arena for many, many years before I ever was informed that in order to conduct investigations for someone that you're not actually employed by, you're not an employee of the organization, you either have to be a licensed attorney or a licensed private investigator. I'd been doing work for clients for years and never knew that. Once I found that out, I could broaden my vision and go, great, now I can become an investigator, which I have since done. Worked under a qualified manager for years and have recently passed the exam myself and am now my own qualified manager. So again, the vision gave me the opportunity to expand my business and offer additional services, which has blossomed my business because so many companies now need external investigators to look into harassment or discrimination or retaliation issues. And that's really the only reason I do it. Every time I say that to someone, I'm a private investor, they go, oh, she's going to be following me around with a camera like Magnum and, you know, checking me out. No. I do it just for my clients so I can offer those additional services from an HR perspective that clients need. And so being able to broaden that and expand my vision has opened up whole new avenues of strategic opportunities for me within the organization. So, Scott, what about you?
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I think you clearly help us delineate the difference between a business plan and a strategic plan. Like the business plan is really about validating your idea. Like, is this going to work? Like, are people actually going to pay me money to offer this service or create this product or a combination of the two? And then the strategic plan, once you actually have vetted your idea that, hey, this could actually work, people, you know, find value in what I'm doing, the strategic plan helps you then put that idea into action, put a plan around that. And the way I do my planning, I use what's called the Entrepreneurial Operating System, or EOS. I did some training a number of years ago with a guy named Gino Wickman. He wrote this book called Traction that I think has sold like a million copies now. And it's very much like the stuff we're doing, all open source. You can go to entrepreneurialoperatingsystem.com, I think it is, or you can Google EOS and Gino Wickman. But he has a tool that steps you through 8 questions to develop your business plan. In fact, I've got mine right here. It's one sheet of paper front and back. The front side is your vision. And the vision is, what are your core values? And what is your core focus? Like, what are you passionate about? What's your niche? And then what's your long range target? Like for me, it's 10 years. And I've got like the number of clients I want, revenue, and then the marketing strategy. What is it that makes you unique about other people compared to your competitors? How do you stand out? And what's your proven process? How do you actually do it? What's your guarantee? And then what are the people that are on your list, like the what describes them. So I can just write, I can tell you what I've got in mind for my my financial coaching. My target market or my list is weird people who are willing to temporarily live a rice and beans lifestyle so they can begin to build wealth and live and give like no one else for the rest of their lives. So that helps you kind of hone in, like, who are those weird people? Where do they hang out? What social media do they hang out on? What blogs do they read? What types of topics are they interested in? And then the 3-year picture is the last piece of the vision, the first of the 5 questions. And that just helps you to kind of say, I'm just going to sketch out what I think my business looks like in 3 years from now. And then you flip over on the backside. Now you get down to kind of the nitty gritty of what you're doing in the short term, which is the 1-year plan, which is 4 to 7 things you're going to accomplish in the next year that will help you take you one step closer to your 3-year picture and one step closer to your 10 or 20 year target. And then where the real magic happens, I think, in this process that I utilize, is they're called 90 day rocks. These are the big things in your life and your business that help you become successful. The sand is all the stuff that gets in our way, that minutia, the emails and the time wasting activities we get drawn into each day. I think you need to spend a little bit of time. I've got about a 15-minute sandbox in the morning and one in the afternoon to deal with all those kinds of things, just so I don't let them distract me. But then the rocks are the big 90-day objectives that you're working on in the next 90 days. And so all of my energy every single day, well, the vast majority of it, I try to make it at least 75% of my energy, is focused on accomplishing those 90-day rocks. And that gives you clarity around what you're going to be working on. You can say no to the stuff much easier that doesn't help you accomplish those. And then finally, the last thing is issues. Issues are all the things that could possibly get in the way. Like, so an issue for me is my kids being home, you know, homeschooling. It's like, well, I'm not going to be able to solve that problem, but at least just by getting it out, I can figure out, like, how can I deal with that? What are all the issues that might be, that could get in the way? So yeah, the Vision Traction Organizer, the Entrepreneur Operating System, if you go to their website, you can download that for free. And it's the same exact model that all of us have, where you go there, you try using it, and you stumble with it, and they've got people to help you. And I do that. In fact, I helped a client put one of these together yesterday for an online jewelry business. And so lots of great free tools out there. And I think that's one of the best ones I've come across to help me really stay focused on what do I need to really be doing to accomplish my goals, and then just focus on the next 90 days. Cause we just tend to lose focus. Like right now is a perfect time to see it. Well, maybe not with COVID, but you go to a gym anytime in January each year and the place is packed. Parking lot's full, no parking places anywhere. Every machine's packed. You go back in June and the place is a ghost town, right? Like everybody just gives up. And so why not just deal with the way we're wired and focus on these 90 day pockets of time and put all your energy into that. And every 90 days, you got some wins to success to celebrate. And then you just plan the next 90 days after that and just keep going.
Yeah. And I would just capitalize on something you said, Scott, because it was really beneficial for me. My business had kind of plodded along, you know, relatively stagnant numbers, hadn't really put in a lot of effort to it. And then once I finally, 3 years ago, decided to really put in effort into building my business, and I had a mentor who asked me questions, just what about this and what about that and where, what are your numbers and what are you shooting for? Really caused me to begin to directly focus on some of those questions that you were talking about that really made me think, okay, where do I want to be in 3 years? Where do I want to be in 5 years? And to take that step really helps to fine tune and focus your energy and your excitement. Oh, I can meet that. I can get that. And oh, I only need two more clients. To meet my own, whether it's written down or at least recorded somewhere, really makes a difference in making sure that you can focus on those goals. So thanks, Justin. What about you? What about your strategic plan?
Yeah, you know, and I particularly hone in on this idea of values. And I'm a firm believer, one of the things that we do, particularly on the in the individual side of coaching, if somebody comes to me and, hey, I'm unhappy and I need to make a change, and I'm not sure what that is, one of the things that we zero in on very quickly is this idea of values. Because I'm a firm believer that the vast majority of workplace conflict happens because we are working in a place that doesn't honor our values. And if I'm working in a place like, let's say I really value punctuality, and I have coworkers, or I have a boss or a direct report or somebody that is always getting me things late, that's going to lead to conflict. And so one of the things that I'm very clear on is you have to live and work in a place that honors your values. And that then extends even into your business. And I'll see if I can pull Juanita back in here. She froze, but want to make sure she gets to be a part of this live stream. But one of the things that we do is talk about this idea of values, right? And so if that's true on the personal level, that's also true on the business level. And so if you're looking at making this shift of saying, okay, I'm ready to launch this entrepreneurial thing, then you have to build in those same sorts of values, right? So if you're working in a place where you really value punctuality, then you have to embed in the fabric that you will always get stuff to your clients at the promised time. And if you really value the freedom and flexibility of being an entrepreneur, then maybe when you start to hire employees, you have to say, look, I'm not going to ask you to be in the office from 8 to 5. I'm going to ask you to get your work done. And if you work better at 2 a.m., I'm going to let you do that, right? But it's whatever that is for you, it's this awareness of what are my personal values and how do I need to make sure that those get worked into the company. Last question, we're butting up against this hour, so we're going to maybe have to keep this one a bit short, and we can tease it into the next one. But we want to talk about this last idea of marketing. And so, Scott, Juanita, I'm going to pull up a website at the end of this just to show everybody, but I would I would feel terrible if in the midst of this, as we start talking about marketing, I don't plug the fact that you two have agreed to come back to the Building with Purpose conference here that launches April 1st. If you attended the conference last year, you know they were on it along with several other people, and we talked digital marketing and finance and HR and entrepreneurship. And this year at the Building with Purpose conference, we have doubled our speaker list, actually just more than doubled our speaker list. And we are branching into new areas and opportunities. So the goal of this year's Building with Purpose conference is to give you a well-rounded picture of health and wellness in 2021, that we've all survived 2020. And in many respects, from a year ago, everything has changed and nothing has changed. And so I've worked very hard to assemble a list of speakers where we can say, we've got personal trainers and wellness doctors coming in to say, how do you take care of yourself physically? And we've got mental performance coaches that are coming in and say, how do you make sure you stay mentally and emotionally resilient? We've got financial coaches coming in and say, how, even in the midst of this and needing, maybe you're in a spot where you need those stimulus checks even just to survive, how can you structure your finances in a way to make sure that you come out of 2021 effectively? So I want each of you to talk briefly, maybe about a bit about your marketing, but then I want to circle back to this Building with Purpose conference. I'll do a screen share and kind of let everybody know where they can go to register for this and get access to that amazing information. So Juanita, why don't you just start with your marketing?
Okay, and I think we've talked briefly about it over some of the questions that we've already answered. But for me, because my business is so personal when it comes to answering questions for either individuals or businesses, it really is networking for me. Whether it gets involved in all of my professional organizations that I'm involved in, being on the listservs for all of those, attending the webinars that they may be putting on, going to, well, in the past, at least we got to go live to have some lunch meetings. We're not doing that now, the pandemic, but just still staying in touch and staying connected. I don't find that for me, LinkedIn or Facebook is a major source of new clients. Mine is more through word of mouth or experiences that they've had with me. Many times I'll teach a training class, and people in the class will then come back and say, hey, we need additional services, or hey, now we want you to do some coaching for us. So mine is much more word of mouth and just excellent service speaking for itself and people wanting that kind of excellent service. And that's what they get when they come to JWeb Consulting. So.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that, Juanita, that it's the same for me that I've done all kinds of advertising on the radio, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and it's expensive to start with to reach out to people. And I find, like, especially for the kind of work we do that's very relational, it's like, are you going to reach out to someone because of some image you see online or some blog post you read? You know, probably not. You got to develop some kind of relationship. So live videos like this, I think, are becoming a much more effective way to reach a larger audience, because even though we're not talking face to face with someone, they're getting to see us in person somewhat and realistic, like an actual person and not just a blog post or a podcast, although podcasts are helpful too. But I've like Juanita, I've had zero luck with any social media stuff. I find it's really good to help create some presence and let people know you're there, but 100% of my business is word of mouth. It's from other people like you two, connecting with other consultants, other coaches that do something different, that find clients that may need some help in a different area that you specialize in. And then networking groups can be helpful too. There's lots of good networking groups to meet other people and learn about their businesses and get referrals. So, you know, referrals is the name of the game when you're doing this, the kind of work we're doing, a service-based type work, is really the best way to market what you do.
Yeah, and I would even say, you know, service clubs that you might be involved in, or religious organizations where people know you and get to know you. You know, those are great sources for people to come and say, hey, wait a minute, I know somebody, she does, you know, HR consulting, or like being able to refer someone else. I referred Scott to one of my clients to help with a very specific project because that's his area of expertise. Could I have done it? yeah, it would have taken me a lot of work and effort and energy to try to get up to speed. And so for me, it was just as easy and beneficial to bring in someone like Scott to help that client in a much more rapid fashion and a much more quality fashion. So I'm seen as the provider of good quality consultants when they need help. That's something that maybe I can't necessarily offer. So that's a great opportunity as well. So.
Yeah. And I would add, I think part of the problem or that a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners face, and certainly one that I've had to wrestle with, is if we're not careful, we can have this belief that I want to win. And that means that Scott and Juanita, you have to lose. Right. And the reality is actually quite the opposite. Right. Like, this is a lie that I think a lot of business people get into. And the true matter is I win when I can help Scott and Juanita win. Like, as a business, my business does better when their business does better. Their friends, their trusted colleagues, their fellow sojourners on this entrepreneurial journey. And if I can do something to help them, I win. Maybe that's financially, maybe that's morally, maybe that's just I get to sleep easy at night knowing that Scott gets to take his kids on vacation this year because of a referral I get to give him. And what a blessing it was to be a part of that, right? Like, whatever that looks like. And so one of the shifts that I have intentionally made, I think that the pandemic has maybe sped that up, and I'll use the term exaggerated that a bit, made it more of an emphasis, is how can I find ways to structure my business so that everybody can win, right? And I think I told both of you kind of early on to this, like when things started to shut down and everyone was like, reaching out to your entire Rolodex of like, are you okay? I kind of very quickly started to tell people, look, I'm going to be fine. Like, my coaching business will survive. At the same time, I realized there are a lot of people's businesses that won't. And so I very quickly kind of developed a, however long this pandemic goes on, my job needs to be, how can I help other people win? And it's been nothing but a blessing for me as a business owner and as a person. And so I think that that's really one of those keys, Juanita, that you were talking about, is it's not this either or, it's this both and. Hey, look, my client had a very particular issue. I hired it out to Scott. I win because I got to make a good referral and help a friend. Scott wins because he got some business. My client wins because they got their problem solved. What a great place to be. And so I think that's unfortunately about all the time we have for marketing. We've said we want to keep this at an hour. We have just bumped over that. So let me try very quickly one more time. We're going to attempt to do this screen share. It's always nice to try things for the first time live. So we'll see how this goes. But if you want to go to the Building with Purpose conference and check what that looks like, you can see it here. I posted a link in the comments below. We are still continuing to announce new speakers. So continue to come back to this page as we add some speakers, but just some updated information. I was working on this before we hopped on the live stream. We'll skip past all of those pictures of me. And right there, top column center, we have Juanita and Scott ready to bring the blessings that they have and the wisdom that they can talk about when it comes to some of their financial, some of their process improvement, and some of their HR things. So be sure to check the comments down below for the ways in which you can register for that. But Scott, Juanita, we're going to do this again. We've made a commitment to continue to do this every 2 weeks. So thank you both for continuing to do this journey and to bring that blessing and that wisdom to other people. And we will catch everybody on the next broadcast. And if you are watching the replay, we certainly want to say thank you to you as well for coming back and watching this. Be sure to leave a like, leave a comment, and share it so that we can continue to bless other people and spread this message. And really, one of my heart and passion desires is to see entrepreneurship and small businesses flourish. And they've been hit hard this last year plus. And one of the things that part of our commitment as the three of us is are committed to is helping those small business owners thrive. And so that's why we are doing this, and want to invite you onto our next live stream in 2 weeks. Until then, stay safe and keep hustling.